So before I start with my thingy, Dean, because we have a bell theme going on right now on the retreat. Yesterday when I spoke with you, you said, you know, in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, we are obsessed with bells. And I was also aware that we use the bell in a particular way today, and I just wanted to ask you to tell us a little bit about your self-proclaimed bell obsession.
This is the bell that I am attached to. I have a lot of work to do. At Plum Village in France, where Thich Nhat Hanh used to live, he would call this a mindfulness bell. Because when it was invited, we never say hit, we always say invited, to sound, we would stop, we would come back to our solidity, our body, and our breath, in order to be present. And when we left the monastery, or a wonderful practice center like this, then we would find other mindfulness bells to take into everyday life with us. For example, one of my mindfulness bells is the steering wheel of my car. So after a busy day in prison, or at a board meeting, I will go to my car, I will look at the steering wheel, and it offers the same message as the sound of this beautiful bell. It allows me to stop, to come back to the solidity of the body, and come back to my breath, and to be forever watchful, in order that I can take the precepts into my everyday life. And that's why I'm a little bit attached.
Can I ask you one more thing? Because I thought when I heard someone else speak about it, you know, I'm aware that you do like a short and then a long. I have two more. It's also just to really invite this, name this into the space.
Thank you.
Is my intention behind it.
Yes. We wake the bell up. And that waking up of the bell prepares us for the full sound of the bell. So a bit like when we've both said, when you have been in silent meditation, where is your mind now? And then we have brought the mind back without judgment, with kindness, with gentleness, back to the body, back to the breath. That is the same. So the wake-up bell, where is your mind now? Ah, stop, pause, back to the body. Or me looking at the steering wheel. And you can find your own mindfulness bells when you walk away from Gaia House. Lots of them. To keep you awake and forever watchful. And mindful of the precepts which you can take into your activism, into your everyday lives. With your family, your loved ones, your friends, your work colleagues. So it's a wake up.
Last question. So those who weren't here, so Dean offered some reflections in the afternoon. And then from time to time, it wasn't even agreed, you know, it just really happened. I got a glance from Dean and I rang the bell. It's also not something what we do when someone is giving a teaching. you know. So can you say a little bit about this?
Thank you. I will, but I'll talk about my way in board meetings. So sometimes I'm in a board meeting and I'm quite passionate about a subject and a seed of energy which might not be wholesome, it might be unwholesome, will come up into my consciousness and I may act it out. I may act out that seed that is unwholesome. So, can you ask the question again?
What is the ringing of the bell in this moment? What is it signifying? What it is reminding you of? What it is it inviting, really?
So it allows me to stop again.
Mm-hmm.
It allows me to stop and offer the Dharma. So sometimes I'm coming to the end of something, or there's an energy in me that I need to work out, I need to hold and understand in order that I can offer the Dharma as purely as I can offer it. And if I feel that there is an energy in me that might sway the Dharma, then I will ask for a bell. The same as within a board meeting, I might go for a drink of water, which is my mindfulness bell.
Mm.
Ah, Dean, this isn't going to help.
Mm.
I go for the water, it's my mindfulness.
Mm, great, mm. Thank you. Thank you, Bernard. Just also wonder what we do now in meetings, you know, which I think it's really, really beautiful. If you have a heart person, so someone who's holding the heart, so we are not, don't ring a bell, but we have this, the person has this intention to see, you know, especially if it gets really busy, you know, we forget so easy our heart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I really want to bring this here into the hall because it's part of lovely things to share, isn't it? Yeah. So bringing the heart in, so that our whole being can resonate, can be online. And of course, sometimes it isn't. You know, sometimes you know we will go into our heads or we will be only in our belly, mm. you know, which is also not whole of the picture. So just also with all these intention and aspirations, really allowing ourselves, it's not that we expect to do this, to manifest this, to live this 100% day, 100% of the day, but it's a good measuring, isn't it? It's a good framework to look. Oh,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. So with this in mind, I would like to share some reflections. And I have to say, in the moment, you know, I really find it a little bit difficult to connect to my heart. Sometimes we have to enter something and then it might awake to what it is. There is an awakeness, but it is not completely aligned. So today what we really emphasized was this permission of taking our seat on this earth, this invitation of allowing to land, to arrive in our location. With this we also invited, you know, something you so beautifully formulated, the earth as part of our Sangha. We spoke about the earth of our Sangha, the ground, the support of our body as our ally. We spoke about breath as an ally, as a friend, as an aspect of our experience we want to get close, want to get intimate with. We spoke about different gestures of the body to support us in our endeavor. Now, when we feel into the gesture of sitting, And I think we said it a couple of times. You know, we immediately have a sense of unshakability, of steadiness, of being supported. And we equally also have this sense of this openness, uprightness. So there is already this beautiful dynamic of unshakability and a dynamic presence and a dynamic awakeness. We haven't done yet anything other than aligning our body to match our intention. This can be so supportive because there is this beautiful dynamic interplay between body, mind and heart. The gesture of bowing, you know, has a particular quality to it. It evokes something in heart mind, bowing, if we allow ourselves to tune into it. So body into position. We equally, yesterday evening, we started to bring our heart mind into position. We could say we invited the intention of simplicity. You know, this putting down to give ourselves fully to the retreat framework. Intention of simplicity, one could say, of renunciation. We are putting something down. To be more fully present implies intention of presence. Intention of presence. Because this will support, and uncluttering this will support us to look deeper, to look and to see, you know, again something I pick up from your teachings, you know, to see when the heart is open and when the heart is closed. When the heart feels connected or disconnected, when the heart doesn't know its interdependence. You know, and sometimes, very often, we forget. You know. And even me sitting here in the role of the teacher, God, I forget. I forget. You know. This morning I woke up, I had pain in my arm, I didn't sleep. My heart was not that available. Yeah, tiredness, stress, heart closes down. We also invited the intention of non-harming, and with it of goodwill, of care, of compassion. And we can relate, again, a lot can be said about it, so I just hopefully I say enough and not too much and not too little. So we invite intentions, we invite, so to say, directions our heart mind can incline itself to. It's not that we're forcing our heart mind into something. So it's more like the sense of, you know, this is where I calibrate my inner compass towards. Yeah. Goodwill, and presence, renunciation, simplification. So it can be like a direction, like a north star I'm following. Ever more to explore, ever more, you know, to go into this direction. And sometimes we veer off, yeah. And this can happen with all intentions, much more than I just mentioned right now. And then we have this, so to say, this inner direction, and we can realign ourselves. So this is one way of looking at it, you know. It's like, oh, this is where I want to steer towards, you know. And in this steering towards, allowing the qualities to come forth. Equally, we could also see, which is slightly different, and sometimes also helpful, it's that we are taking the seed in these qualities. So they are there, and I'm taking a seed in renunciation and simplification. I'm taking a seed in care, in kindness. So I'm dropping into something. Do you see the slight energetic difference? Yeah, can be so beautiful. And I find this particular beautiful, this way of perceiving, this way of looking in relationship to the precept, to the ethical considerations, you know, like this, the ethic, you know, ethic consideration are deeply, deeply woven into every strand of the Buddhist teachings. These are ethical teachings, yeah. And we can go in this, oh, this is an intention of non-harming. And there can be also this sense, I'm taking the seed in non-harming. And then I let it, allow it to arise through me, through this being. So again, different ways to relate to it. Equally with intention, sometimes really helpful to keep it quite open, really limitless. You know, ever more to discover, ever more to find out, you know, constant recalibrating. And also at other times to have very specific manifestations, to actually do specific things that express this quality. As an example, I decided this year, I decided to do something over the 40 days of Lent. So I had two things I want to renounce. Yeah, so I'm doing something very specific. Yeah, and I also wanted to cultivate something. So I made the pledge to offer 40 acts of generosity. Yeah, and again, it's not to tell you, look what I'm an amazing person, but it was actually an invitation to constantly have this as a threat where I'm taking the seed in this quality and then I want something to actually concrete manifest out of it. Yeah, makes sense? So there is a onward leading direction, but there's also a manifestation. Yeah, both really, really supporting this inner atmosphere, this setting of the heart, hopefully. And of course, this setting of the heart will also highlight all the moments, all the many situations where my heart feels really stingy. Because I look at my life through a particular lens. Yeah. No. Yeah, I see this clearer. Yeah. And not to make oneself bad with it, but also to see, oh, this is such a painful place to be in. You know, again, the heart is closed now. And what allows the heart again to open up? So Sila, again, a lot can be said about it. Sila stands for ethics, ethical consideration. This grappling of how do we align with our deepest, deepest values. You know, and there loads of books have been written about it. Yeah. And it's one of these aspects of our humanness that seems to make us very human, you know, this grappling with ethical, morally considerations, this ethical sensitivity we have. What is the effect What are the effects of my actions? How do I want to align them? What are my priorities? What do I want to give energy to? What do I want to nourish? What do I put down? You know, what do I pick up? You know, so important, you know. And some say this is actually part of what makes us human. Yeah. Can I have a bell, please?
Of course.
Thank you. Thank you, it's helpful. Just wondered where do I want to go from here? So maybe a slightly different take. What we also shortly alluded to, I think again Dean alluded to it, you know, explaining this term from your tradition of inner being. You know, and it's really based on the wisdom and an understanding and hopefully increasing understanding of our profound interdependence and interrelatedness. It's not the same as codependent arising, but it is along these lines, just want to say this. But so we stay with interdependence, this quality which is also multidimensional, has many, many levels. And it understands that this life, our lives, they are intrinsically interwoven into the whole web of life in so many, many different ways. We are deeply embedded in the whole of the cosmos, actually. And I say this, and it's cognitive, you know, and when it drops, I'm like, what? Yeah, wow. None of us can exist in and of themselves, none of us. In so many ways, we can open up this understanding, we can experience this understanding with each breath. We are participated in the whole of life. Yeah. With each breath, we connect back to the bacteria I mentioned last night, which started to form 2.7 billion years ago. It's a direct line. It's a direct line. Yeah. With each breath, you know, one could say it's a gateway to open up to the amazing diversity and beauty and mystery of life. And of course, sometimes this is so not our reality. This is not what we feel. This is not what is operating in us. And it's something, again, it's an outlook we can cultivate, which can nourish the heart. And of course, it comes with different effects, and you know, it can be very empowering, and it can be deeply challenging, because we are so intrinsically interwoven. Our existence matters, yeah. And sometimes we might feel so much as we don't matter at all. But that's not the reality. Bhikkhu Bodhi, he writes, because of the relational structure of our existence, the relational structure of our existence, we are engaged in a perpetual two-way interaction with the world, shaping and altering, being shaped and altered. So we are shaping and we are shaped. We are participating in a relational field. We are shaped and we are shaping. We are shaping and we are shaped. And one could say in the Buddhist teaching, the framework of the ethical trainings, is acknowledging this deeply relational aspect of our life. They don't tell us that we are bad or good. They are not assessment tools to measure us as bad or good. Good being, bad being. Buddhism doesn't make any statement about the nature of the human heart. It doesn't say it's intrinsically good, it's intrinsically bad. It will arise according to what is fed, what is cultivated, what is supported. This is what, you know, this is hopefully a big part of what brings us on retreats. Yeah. They don't tell us exactly how to behave. Yeah. But they tell us the areas, expressions of body, mind, and heart, where our actions can harm ourselves and those around us. And to look deeply. So very basic foundation of the teaching. I read several times the gradual exploration of the Dhamma. How it was taught. First offering that was given was teachings on generosity. Interesting, isn't it? The teaching of giving, and I think for also important, giving and receiving. The second teaching was on sila, on ethics, on non-harming. And apparently only then it would go more to the, no, I think in both, in generosity and zeal, I have to say caveat, is a lot of wisdom in it. But then it would go more to the more openly wisdom teaching, like the Four Noble Truths. It's an interesting, again, gradual exposition of the Dharma. This is the foundation. Foundation is this, are these qualities of generosity, simplicity, sila. This is where we can place ourselves. And of course, we live in a much more complex world than the Buddha and other wisdom teachers, much more complex. And we now find ourselves in a world where my action may have an effect on beings, humans, non-humans, on the other side of the world I might never even have contact with. Yeah. Our actions might have an effect far into the future. It's not just affecting those around us. And here we are, a sensitive, most likely really good-hearted people trying to grapple with very, very, very complex dynamics. Last Last summer, I taught a weekend in Germany, and we had a meal together. And at our table, we spoke about veganism, and we could just say, but and it's like every 2 minutes, this was like the mindful panel. Someone would say, God, it's so complicated. It's so complex. You know, it's not that straightforward. And here we are. We have to grapple with this. We have to take this serious. More than ever. And I think maybe the five precepts we mentioned shortly is quite an accessible pathway into this exploration. We are stepping into this intention, we are picking up this intention, we're taking the seed, again the two modalities of non-harming, and then we explore them. You know, and I think one very beautiful effect of it, you know, stepping into these intentions we give, and this will be very often mentioned in this context, we give each other the gift of safety. You know, we agree that we will be in a way with each other where others and we ourselves can relax around each other. So precious. I like to somehow, because, and I have this image, I don't think it's a complete wrong image, absolutely not actually. I have the right image. I have the right opinion, the right view. That the Thich Nhat Hanh Sangha really can teach a lot, you know, has really explored this aspect of the teachings in many, many different ways, you know, really imputes them. Look, very often, you know, when I came first to the teachings, they were never meant like this, but in my heart, mind, they were landing on thou shalt not, and then we had to do it right. Yeah. And then it was, if we do it again, it was not how it, this is where it landed, you know. And if we did it wrong, we were bad, you know. And what I then also start to really understand from being exposed and spending time with this, it's an invitation, and we can always re-intent. Yeah. Yeah, it's a training, it's a very, very helpful lens to look at our actions of body, mind and heart, yeah. Which is already much more liberating because it supports the heart to know what is possible for it, yeah. It invites the heart to stretch, to question, to challenge. And then I came across versions of the five precepts, again from your Sangha, and what I loved about them was not only the renunciation aspect. So here it's like, I refrain from, that's classical precepts, I refrain from harming any other living being, of taking was it not given. And what came in was a cultivation aspect. Yeah. So I'm putting something down and I'm also picking something up, which in itself is so delightful, I find. So I don't know if you want to say something. Mm. If not, I can say more.
Please say more.
No, you say no.
I think the reason I practice with this tradition is exactly how you framed it. Rather than thou shalt not, the precepts, Thai Thich Nhat Hanh is focusing on how we cultivate, how we also are mindful. He's actually reframed the precepts and calls them mindfulness trainings, which points me to the practice that we've been doing for a day or two and we'll be doing for a week, links so closely to the precepts that that ability to respond to the world by cultivating mindfulness, which we have been cultivating as we've sat, is generous. It's a generous act, and it's a way of engaging with the world with an open heart, because we cultivate. You said it all. I mean, truly.
No. Yeah. Great. Thank you. So maybe I just want to pick up one thing more. You know, again, like this really de-linking, decoupling for at least my cultural conditioning. You know, when I hear something, I refrain from doing this or the other. You know, it is. Even without me intending, it will be somehow get a little bit enmeshed with a more Abrahamic religion approach, you know, thou shalt not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what I find really beautiful to see them as powerful lenses to look at my actions, to examine my life. You know, and also to take them serious in the terms that actually the heart, you know, they have to speak to me, these qualities, isn't this value? They have to speak to the heart, you know, and to then really see that when it's disaligned, it's actually painful.
May I say one?
Mm-hmm. Please.
I guess the other thing about the mindfulness trainings or the precepts is it's so essential to put them into practice with Sangha. Yeah. So it's not a personal thing, it's a collective thing. So the mindfulness trainings, the precepts adapted for today's world are on a weekly basis discussed, not intellectually or purely intellectually, but also from the heart and from our own experience of our conversation with the world. So there are practical ways of keeping the precepts alive, cultivating our generosity in the world with the support of Sangha. And I think that's something that it's not some abstract thing that I shouldn't do. It's a thing that I should cultivate with my friends on the path, in the world that I live in, from my heart.
Yeah, wonderful. Probably also then having this someone to bounce back, you know, because we all will have our particular weak spots, you know, and here I go, you know. Ah, what is happening here? What is steering the heart to actually devalue what I hold precious, you know?
Without judgment. In a place without that is judgment. Safe and without judgment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we are with friends.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Can I have a bell?
Mm. Hey, it's catching, isn't it?
Thank you. So there is something, I don't know exactly right now how to formulate it yet. Also, in this relationship to these trainings, to these intentions of non-harming, I just said a moment ago, you know, if they're resonating, you know, they're resonating with something I hold precious and dear, yeah, which actually fleshes them out, mm-hmm. yeah. Fleshes them out, they make them, you know, again, there is something aligned, you know, we can sense it in the body when we are aligned, and we can sense it if we are not aligned, mm-hmm. you know. And equally, there's also something, sometimes we can take on something like this, and it's just, you know, okay, that's what one does. And it actually, I think, at least for me, it actually doesn't, it's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not sustainable. I have one example for this, and it changed, and some of you might heard it, you know. So I have my two older nieces. One of my nieces, some of you heard a lot about my nieces. I love to speak about them. decided, so they were always really interested to find out why I was not eating meat. So they would always ask, Kirsten, tell us, why don't you eat meat? It was like a ritual, yeah. And then I would give an answer, and sometimes it was a funny answer, you know, but it was really like this game, and it was not just a game, because there was also then something is really, they want to know something, they're intrigued by it. So the younger one decided to become vegetarian. And it was really her decision, you know, and luckily she was supported by the rest of the family. And she was really grappling with it, because grappling with this ethical issue here, said, you know, and I still love meat, you know, and somehow I think I shouldn't love meat, and what do I do? And said, you know, but you can still love meat, you just make this decision not to eat it, you know, and you can allow yourself the love of meat, yeah. So she thought somehow she is wrong if she still loves meat, yeah. So it was a really lovely conversation, and like a lot in this. And her older sister picked it up, and I don't know exactly why, but something back then, it changed now, was missing for her, you know, like a deep connection. So she became a vegetarian, but it was more along the, and it, please forgive me, Amy, I love you. It was more along the line, look, I'm not eating meat. And I would love to eat meat, and look, you know, I'm the martyr now to not eat meat, you know. And it wasn't sustainable, you know, because it was too much against, this is my, you know, I take it, maybe this was not happening for her, I want to give her this, of course. It was too much, I'm doing this to be seen and perceived in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And this is not what it is about, really not. And it was really interesting to see, you know, to actually first of all see that it wasn't sustainable. This was not enough nourishment to actually allow the heart mind to really put something down, yeah. But when something else clicked, yeah, when that, I think probably when something else came in, and then actually this became much easier. So also an interesting aspect I find in this whole exploration, so that we have to find our relationship that really is meaningful for us, yeah. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, okay, very quickly. In 2001, I went to Plum Village for the first time. I've disclosed to a number of you that I was a soldier once, and I liked dark rum and lager. I had a PhD in drinking rum and lots of lager. Very skilled at it. One week at Plum Village, and I gave up dark rum and lager. And I asked a very experienced Zen practitioner, I thought it was magic, I just couldn't understand, because I wasn't like your niece, it was that.
Yeah.
It was that, I gave it up. So it wasn't, look, you know, I've done this, eh? You know, tick a box. It just sat. It felt right. And I asked a very skilled practitioner, and he said, "You were ripe. You were ripe." And I think that's what your niece was. Because for about 5 or 6 years before, I had been reading about intoxicants. I had been practicing mindfulness with groups. I had been discussing it. And it hadn't felt right. But then it just dropped, and it was ripe. Like a plum. Thanks for that reminder.
Oh, welcome.
Wow, it came up.
So the five precepts. These trainings, these expressions of the heart, one could say, that know its deep interrelationality, isn't it? Can be seen as expressions of the heart that show what is possible for the heart, and not in terms possible for the heart of I can renounce, but I can relate from a place where I really want to show up,
yes,
and cause as little harm as possible. And also in this, and sometimes we will, you know, intentionally and unintentionally, we will cause harm. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have our, what did you call it earlier, our conditioned patterns. You had a lovely word for it, you know. Pattern, habitual.
Habit energies.
Habit energies, you know.
Yeah.
We all will have our habit energy. Where especially, you know, if the heart mind is more contracted, is stressed, is not feeling, you know, it's not feeling able to rise in its beauty, you know, then we can see that we can, without us even saying how we get there, how we get caught up in our habitual patterns. You know, and sometimes we can be so hard around ourselves. I know, and still I'm doing it. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We know, and we still have the tendencies, isn't it?
Mm.
And how also to hold this, you know, this contradiction where we know and we don't seem to know at the same time. Mm. Where we want to honor something and the next moment we kick it into the face somehow, yeah. And to hold this, you know, to hold this also again with a lot of compassion and kindness, and really with this, what is, you know, what isn't ripe yet actually, isn't it? What isn't ripe yet?
Mm.
And not as a demand of it to be ripe, but as something isn't ripe yet.
And holding that.
And holding this, yeah. Great.
Mm.
Great. So. I think I like to end here, unless there's something from you, Dean. Yeah. So thank you for listening. You know, just want to also say this is a very unusual format we are developing here. It's as new to me as it is to you.
I love it.
And I think it really comes from this really wanting to hear from each other. So before we come to an end, this particular aspect of our day, just taking a moment to contact yourself, to once again let yourself be received by the holding of earth, taking your seat. You have your ally of earth, always there, steady, reliable, unconditionally welcoming you. You have your ally of breath breathing you. Space around you, embracing, welcoming you as well. Taking your seat here. taking the seat you wish of, these qualities, this intention, this fertile soil of non-harming, this beautiful framework to examine, to explore, inquire into our life. Not as a tool to beat us up, but as a tool for liberation.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.